content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Texas Tribune, Newsweek, Religion News Service, and Anabaptist World. Our first article was published on November 25 in the News and Observer, but originally written by Jaden Edison of Texas Tribune. Texas Education Board approves Bible-infused curriculum. A majority of the Texas State Board of Education gave final approval Friday to a state-authored curriculum under intense scrutiny in recent months for its heavy inclusion of biblical teachings. 8 of the 15 board members voted to approve Bluebonnet Learning, the elementary school curriculum proposed by the State Education Agency earlier this year. The curriculum was designed with a cross-disciplinary approach that uses reading and language arts lessons to advance or cement concepts in other disciplines, such as history and social studies. Critics, which included religious studies scholars, say the curriculum's lessons allude to Christianity more than any other religion, which they say could lead to the bullying and isolation of non-Christian students, undermine church-state separation, and grant the state far-reaching control over how children learn about religion. They also questioned the accuracy of some lessons. The curriculum's defenders say that references to Christianity will provide students with a better understanding of the country's history. Texas school districts have the freedom to choose their own lesson plans, so the choice to adopt the materials will remain with them. But the state will offer an incentive of $60 per student to districts that adopt the lessons, which could appeal to some as schools struggle financially after several years without a significant raise in state funding. Three Republicans, Evelyn Brooks, Patricia Hardy, and Pam Little, joined the board's four Democrats in opposition to the materials. Leslie Racine, a Republican whom Governor Greg Abbott appointed to temporarily fill the State Board of Education's District 13 seat, vacated by former member Aisha Davis, a Democrat who ran successfully for a Texas House seat earlier this year, voted for the curriculum. Abbott handpicked Racine, who was the deciding vote on the materials, to fill the seat through the end of the year, days before the general election, bypassing Democrat Tiffany Clark. A majority of District 13 residents voted this election for Clark to represent them on the board next year. She ran unopposed. Board members who expressed support for the curriculum said during the week they believe the materials would help students improve their reading and understanding of the world. Members also said politics in no way influenced their vote and that they supported the materials because they believed it would best serve Texas children. In my view, these stories are on the education side and are establishing cultural literacy, Houston Republican Will Hickman said. And there's religious concepts like the Good Samaritan and the Golden Rule and Moses that all students should be exposed to. The proposed curriculum prompts teachers to relay the story of the Good Samaritan, a parable about loving everyone, including your enemies, to kindergartners as an example of what it means to follow the Golden Rule. The story comes from the Bible, the lesson explains, and was told by a man named Jesus as part of his Sermon on the Mount, which included the phrase, "Do unto others as you would have done unto you." Many other religions have their own version of the Golden Rule. Brooks, one of the Republicans who opposed the materials, noted this week that the Texas Education Agency is not a textbook publishing company and said treating it like such has created an uneven playing field for companies in the textbook industry. Brooks also said she has yet to see evidence showing the curriculum would improve student learning and that she was opposed to the state using Texas school children as experiments. Our next article was published in the News and Observer on November 25, but written by Natalie Venegas of Newsweek. Rabbis killing in UAE was terror attack, Israel says. An Israeli Moldovan rabbi, S.V. Kogan, who went missing last week in the United Arab Emirates, has been found dead in what Chief Rabbi Sir Ephraim Mirvis has called a devastating blow for peace on Sunday. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office announced Kogan had been found after he was killed in what it described as a heinous anti-Semitic terror incident. While Israeli authorities did not say how they determined the killing of Kogan was a terror attack and offered no additional details, the announcement has drawn international attention as regional tensions escalate. Kogan, 28, was an ultra-Orthodox rabbi managing Rimmon Market, a kosher grocery store in Dubai, a city that has seen an influx of Israeli tourists and businesses since the landmark 2020 Abraham Accords. His disappearance on Thursday prompted a search, with the Emirati Interior Ministry describing Kogan as being missing and out of contact, adding that specialized authorities immediately began search and investigation operations upon receiving the report. While the details surrounding Kogan's death remain unclear, Israeli leaders have vowed to seek justice for the attack. In response to Kogan's death, Mirvis took to X, formerly Twitter, to condemn the incident. The senseless murder of Rabbi Z. Kogan is not only a devastating blow to his family and the Jewish community in the UAE, but to all who cherish the values of peace, respect, and coexistence, he wrote. He added, "This heinous act of terror also strikes at the heart of everything that the remarkable story of the young Emirati Jewish community has come to embody. A society built on mutual respect, tolerance, and peace. No act of evil will deter us from uniting against the forces of darkness that seek to divide us." Ted Dutch, CEO of American Jewish Committee, wrote on X, "The global Jewish community mourns Rabbi Kogan. May his memory be a blessing, and may the perpetrators of this murder soon be brought to justice." Newsweek has reached out to Israel and the Emirati government via email for comment. Meanwhile, Netanyahu told a regular cabinet meeting later on Sunday that he was deeply shocked by Kogan's disappearance and death, emphasizing continued collaboration with the UAE, which has maintained formal ties with Israel despite the region's volatile climate. Israeli President Isaac Herzog similarly condemned the killing and thanked UAE authorities for their swift response, expressing confidence in efforts to bring the perpetrators to justice. The incident comes against the backdrop of heightened tensions following Hamas attack on southern Israel in October 2023 and Israel's subsequent retaliatory strikes in Gaza and Lebanon. During Hamas attack, 1,200 people were killed, and more than 44,000 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, per the Gaza Health Ministry, according to the Associated Press. Relations between Israelis and the broader Arab world have been tested, with public sentiment in the UAE reflecting growing anger over the conflict. According to the AP, while the Emirati government did not respond to a request for comment, senior Emirati diplomat Anwar Gargash wrote on X in Arabic on Sunday that the UAE will remain a home of safety, an oasis of stability, a society of tolerance and coexistence, and a beacon of development, pride, and advancement. Now an article that was published in the Christian Century in October 2024, but written by Catherine Post of the Religion News Service. I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. The significance of Sonia Massey's near final words. As video footage of the fatal police shooting of Sonia Massey, a 36-year-old black woman who lived in Springfield, Illinois, circulated online, many viewers began memorializing her near final words, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." Massey initially called 911 from her home on July 6, citing concerns of an intruder. The body camera footage, which was released July 22 by the Illinois State Police, shows Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson shooting Massey in the head, following a brief exchange over a pot of hot water. Grayson has since been fired and charged with first-degree murder, aggravated battery, and official misconduct. And the U.S. Department of Justice has opened an investigation into Massey's death. According to some faith leaders and scholars, Massey's near last words, spoken twice in an even voice to the deputies before her death, carried a spiritual and cultural weight specific to black church communities. Every person raised in a certain kind of black church knows the power and gravity of those words, wrote womanist biblical scholar Will Gaffney on our website. Those are the words to be said when facing the evil that has walked in your door and will soon take your life. It is not a prayer to save one's life or for God to come down and prevent the flagrant act of violence to come. It is something between a benediction and a malediction, laying bare the wickedness of the soul encased in human skin standing before her. The phrase has begun to take on a life of its own, becoming memeified and posted by faith leaders and others. Whether it's on T-shirts or bumper stickers, that statement is flowing through everywhere, said T. Ray McJunkins, a pastor at Union Baptist Church in Springfield, who has been serving as an informal liaison between Massey's family and government officials. McJunkins agreed that the phrase is a cultural one, that's especially common in black charismatic church context. He said it's typically invoked when something feels out of one's hands, and certainly when there's a sense of the demonic. We understand and we believe the Bible as it relates to there being a power in the name of Jesus, McJunkins said. Massey, who leaves behind two children, was a member of Second Timothy Baptist Church in Springfield. Carrie Beckwith, the pastor at nearby Springfield Grace United Methodist Church, was asked to officiate the July 19 funeral service, which included a sermon on Psalm 46 and a soloist performing Yolanda Adams' song, "The Battle is the Lord's." The darkness of that day cannot and will not extinguish the light of Sonia Massey, Beckwith said to the packed funeral home. In an interview, Beckwith provided his own explanation of Massey's near last words. For Sonia to say that, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus," she in that moment saw something demonic in the eyes of that officer. She felt something in her spirit that did not line up with the love of Jesus Christ. Some news outlets report that Massey had been managing a diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia with medication. Massey was several feet away from the deputies when she was shot. "She was not in a position to harm them," Beckwith said. Her mental illness was not justification for her leaving this earth the way that she did, he added. In the days following the funeral, Beckwith said that local faith leaders responded to the tragedy by taking cues from local community groups, including the local Black Lives Matter chapter, and Intricate Minds, a grassroots harm reduction organization, which have organized peaceful marches and community events. At a news conference on July 22, Ben Crump, a nationally recognized lawyer representing Massey's family, spoke to reporters after the release of the video footage. Until we get justice for Sonia Massey, we rebuke this discriminatory criminal justice system in the name of Jesus, he said. Crump has handled several other notable cases, including and representing the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and Trayvon Martin. Majunkins, who co-founded the faith-based social justice group Faith Coalition for the Common Good in 2008, has been working behind the scenes, connecting Massey's family with decision-makers and advocating on their behalf, particularly in conversations with Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell. In late July, Massey's father, James Wilburn, and others began calling for the Campbells' resignation, following news that Grayson had two prior DUI convictions and had worked at six different law enforcement agencies since 2020. Nick Junkins hosted conversations between Massey's family and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton at his church on July 22 and teamed up with the DOJ to hold a community listening session at the church. "My community needs to heal," said Majunkins, who added that Massey's death has hit close to home for many in Springfield. "Whether they know it or not, we're going through the five stages of grief. As a community leader and religious leader, I'm not doing justice if I don't step up to bring the community together, to walk them through a grief process." Amid that process, McJunkins said, Massey's rebuke will continue to be a focal point and a rallying cry. Now an article that was published by the Christian Century on October 24 and written by Tim Huber of Anabaptist World, entitled Peace Center Completed in Philippines. A new peace training center in the Philippines, which builds on the development work of longtime Mennonite Church Canada International Witness Workers, is set to celebrate its grand opening in November. The Malipayan Peace Hub will provide peace and reconciliation training for churches, military leaders, local organizations, and indigenous communities, and serve as the home for Coffee for Peace, an agriculture development project that helps fund world peace. The complex is the vision of Dan and Joji Pantoja, who have worked to build peace on the conflicted island of Mindanao since they arrived in 2006 after living in Canada for 20 years. The Pantojas grew up in the Philippines alongside a history of Spanish Catholic colonialism and clashes between Muslims and Christians, others between communist activists and the government, and indigenous tribal uprisings. Violence often pushed indigenous groups into the hills, where it is harder to farm. Poverty fed anti-government animosity. At least 2 million people have been displaced on Mindanao by five decades of fighting among six major armed groups. Dan Pantoja became a student at Anabaptist Peace Theology after moving to Canada. He's been an activist against the martial rule of dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. "The woundedness of my self-perception has a failed revolutionary, and the healing process in my 20 years in Canada would be my qualification to explore serving the Creator and our people again," he said. The couple established the interfaith organization Peace Builders Community Incorporated in 2006 to share nonviolent peace building and social justice principles with Christians and Muslims. They also found they could build peace through coffee. Mindanao's mountains are ideal for growing coffee beans, but disruptions due to violence, poor plant varieties, and unprocessed beans resulted in poor returns for growers. The Pantojas facilitated conflict mediation between communities in armed conflict by inviting leaders for dialogue over coffee. Understanding between rivals emerged slowly, leading to invitations to other communities to have coffee together for peace. Coffee for Peace developed into a growers cooperative with a processing and roasting facility that sells to buyers at fair prices. Orders are now shipping to Europe. A 3-year program trains growers on ecologically sustainable practices. A cafe in Davao City sells drinks directly to customers. Coffee for Peace funds 75% of Peace Builders Community's budget, MC. MC Canada covers the other 25%. I couldn't imagine having a summary of my life printed on my tombstone as "spent her life managing rich people's money," said Joji Pandoja. I wanted to be remembered as a person who walked with the people as they find dignity through sustainable economic development. Over the past year, MC Canada worked to raise $235,000 to construct the Malipayon Peace Hub. In addition to housing training, the facility includes upgraded processing for Coffee for Peace and a farmer training center, a new staff house and guest house, and a delivery vehicle. The upgraded processing facility will enable U.S. Department of Agriculture approval of operations, which is vital for accessing export markets. Increased production capacity is anticipated to replace McCanada funding by 2026. The last of our articles was published by the Religion News Service, written by Adele M. Banks, entitled AME Church Announces Retirement Settlement Agreement During General Conference. The African Methodist Episcopal Church announced a $20 million partial settlement agreement with a number of its clergy who had sued the denomination, accusing it of mishandling their retirement funds. The settlement, which must still be approved by a judge, came on August 26 as delegates to the AME Church General Conference met in Columbus, Ohio, for their quadrennial meeting. Prior to and during the meeting, AME Church members were calling for action after the former director of the Department of Retirement Services, Jerome Harris, and others were accused in a 2022 class action litigation of a total loss of $90 million. The agreement reached today demonstrates the church's ongoing commitment to its clergy and the determination to hold those truly responsible accountable, Douglas P. Selby, the AME Church's general counsel, said in the announcement. The prayer of the church is that this settlement and the reforms to which the church has committed itself will help to close a painful chapter in the denomination's history and begin the path toward healing and recovery of faith and trust among its members and in the systems of the church. In a separate statement, Selby noted that the settlement agreement applies only to the clergy members' litigation and not to a separate suit the historically black denomination filed against Harris, who was accused of embezzling money from retirement accounts. In May, Harris died suddenly of a heart attack. In recent interviews, AME church members said they were waiting for the denomination to achieve its stated goal of making participants whole, after many were left with only an estimated 30% of their money in their accounts. William Rivera, Senior Vice President of Litigation at AARP Foundation, which assisted in the proposed settlement, said nearly 5,000 pastors, church elders, and other employees were affected. AME church officials, in their settlement announcement, repeated their pledge to do all they can to restore the retirement money, adding that the settlement agreement would permit continuing efforts by the plaintiffs and the denomination to pursue claims against remaining defendants, including Symetra, a financial services entity. Prior to the meeting in Columbus, James F. Miller, who had replaced Harris as executive director of the Department of Retirement Services in 2021, issued a report discussing how a new program is bringing an average return of 8% on current investments. However, in Columbus, Miller asked the delegates to be allowed to resign from his position after receiving a no-confidence vote on his leadership from the Commission on Retirement Services. The Christian Recorder said Miller quoted the late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, "I did the best I could with what I had to work with." Miller's request was granted, and Brian K. Blackwell, pastor of St. Paul Smithfield AME Church in Birmingham, Alabama, was elected as the new executive director of the Department of Retirement Services. The bishops acknowledged in their quadrennial address, a written commentary and critique of church and society, that they had to rebuild trust after the investigations. "Although we have developed a new plan that charts a new path and provides more transparency, the future of the AME Church will also depend on our ability to incorporate responsible leadership strategies that will hold the church's entire infrastructure accountable." J. Edgar Boyd, a leader of the group AMEs for Justice and Accountability, said he viewed the settlement agreement announcement with celebration and caution. "On behalf of the 5,000-plus annuitants in the AME Church, I follow my fellow clergy servants of the church in celebrating a favorable outcome and turning point in such a painful event in the life of the church," said Boyd, the retired senior pastor of First African Methodist Episcopal Church in L.A. "I remain cautiously optimistic in the promised resolution in making the clergy servants whole." We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you'll listen again next time. I am Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.